KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in San Francisco in the Glen Park area.
Sunset, Portola Valley.
I currently reside in Nob Hill.
West Portal.
I live in Russian Hill.
Coming up, we'll see what a change in immigration status will mean for a small Haitian church in the North Bay.
I live Haiti long time. It's not like nothing changed. It's like everything is the same.
Then we'll look at the complicated history of African-American student achievement in San Francisco and an expansive new plan for improvement.
It's not that the children are failing. We are failing. Yeah. Now it's time for us to fess up and show some fruits of repentance.
Stay tuned. Cross Currents is next. The Trump administration is ending a humanitarian program that's allowed 59,000 Haitians to live and work in the U.S. since an earthquake ravaged their country in 2010. Temporary protected status is a legal designation for people who are unable to safely return to their home country because of armed conflict, natural disaster, or other extraordinary conditions. There are over 300,000 TPS holders from 10 countries now living in the U.S. In the next few months, several more of those countries are due to lose their TPS designation. This decision means more than 50,000 Haitians will have to move back to their homeland by July 2019. And for those in Marin County, where there is a small but vibrant Haitian community, that will be devastating, as KALW's Nina Gensler-Debs reports.
On a rainy Wednesday night at a church in Novato, Pastor Fritz Toussaint teaches Haitian Creole to children gathered around a table.
Let's read. Okay.
The Marin Church of the Nazarene is one of several around the county serving more than 1,000 Haitian immigrants and their families.
Okay. So, la lune in Haitian, how would I say that? La lune. You see, la lune.
Many Haitians in Marin can trace their roots back to one woman, Elisane Thermidor, who emigrated here 60 years ago. She sponsored relatives who moved here, and they helped other family members come, until there was enough of a Haitian community in the North Bay to support about 10 small churches.
Maybe in 8, 9 in Marin. In Novato, we have about 4.
Which is something Fritz didn't even know when he moved to the U.S. in 1991. He came to study theology at San Jose Christian College, but his visa expired. He stayed to finish his degree. Eventually, Fritz helped found this church in 2003. He was undocumented then, even though his church sponsored his application for a work visa.
The church applied with immigration, but they said the church was too small. They couldn't be an employer.
It took a catastrophic event in 2010 to change things for him.
It's been a huge earthquake, magnitude 7.0, just off the coast of Haiti, the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
The January 2010 earthquake killed more than 200,000 people. More than 1 million were displaced. Because of the disaster, undocumented Haitian immigrants already living in the States became eligible for temporary protected status. So Fritz finally became a legal resident again and was officially employed by the church.
Long Haitian, what does that mean?
Language Haitian.
Ah, good. Do you remember about syntax?
He's a hard worker, and sometimes I feel like I should tell him to take a break as well, to relax.
That's seventh grader John Samuel Saint Vilcar Toussaint. He goes by Sam. Same last name, but no relation to Pastor Fritz. Sam comes to Creole class every week.
It can be everybody or everything.
It can be everybody.
Or everything.
Yes, tout.
But what's chow?
Sam was born here, so he's a citizen. But his mother, Armoniz, has temporary protected status. She says Sam knows that her immigration status means she might not be able to stay, and he wants to help.
He tell me, I will give you paper. I'm a citizen. I tell him, no. He say, yes, I born here. I can give you paper. They cannot deport you.
But the possibility of Armoniz and Pastor Fritz having to leave is very real.
By definition, TPS is temporary, meant to be temporary.
That's John Kelly, currently President Trump's chief of staff, at a press conference back in June, shortly after a visit to Haiti.
So they should start thinking now about what will happen in the not-too-distant future.
Temporary protected status has been around since the 90s. If your country is designated for TPS and you're already living in the United States, you could qualify. If you get it, you won't get deported. You can get a work permit, but there's no path to citizenship. Many of the countries that have received TPS are granted extensions, and so people stay longer. Critics take issue with that, saying TPS has become anything but temporary. Here's Representative Louis Gohmert of Texas on Fox and Friends.
They would get temporary again and again and again, and it becomes a way to come into the United States illegally but permanently.
President Obama's administration extended Haiti's designation several times. A memo from U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services in April recommends the end of the program and states that, quote, Haiti has made significant progress since the earthquake, but it also lists the country's many problems.
No food, no clean water, no hospital, no wood.
That's Ishnal Toussaint, one of Armonis's younger brothers. He's a citizen, so he's traveled back and forth a few times lately.
It's crazy. They're killing people, stealing.
Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Almost 60% of its population lives in poverty. There's an ongoing cholera epidemic, which has claimed almost 10,000 lives since 2010. Violence is widespread. Hurricane Matthew, which struck in 2016, only made things worse.
It's the same thing. It's always struggling. People doesn't have a job.
Isnold and Armoniz, like many Haitian expatriates, send money back to support family and friends.
My brother have Down syndrome. He's just like my son. He's my big brother. But I have to help him.
She hasn't seen him in 17 years because TPS beneficiaries are not allowed to travel internationally without special permission.
I leave him since 2000. I don't see him since that time. That's really painful.
The World Bank estimates that in 2016, almost 30% of Haiti's GDP came from people like Armoniz, living abroad and sending money back. Losing that flow of remittances could cripple Haiti's economy. But the Department of Homeland Security doesn't evaluate TPS designations on historic or systemic problems, only what's strictly linked to temporary events. That April policy memo also says there's no evidence that letting Haitians stay temporarily is, quote, contrary to the national interest. Even so, the DHS says extending a temporary program is contrary to national interest. Immigrant advocates disagree, sometimes loudly, like at this rally a few weeks ago at San Francisco's City Hall.
More than 80% of TPS recipients are employed, and a rate which is a rate much higher than that of U.S.-born population, which is 63%.
That's Adubu Traore of the African Advocacy Network. It's been assisting Bay Area Haitians with TPS.
These statistics are quite expressive. Yet, the Donald Trump administration has decided to go after our people, our brothers.
Of the several dozen people rallying here to save TPS, many are Salvadoran, another community that is very concerned about their temporary status ending. Salvadorans make up the largest number of TPS holders in the United States, about 212,000. Of those, about 50,000 live in California. El Salvador was granted TPS in 2001. Also because of an earthquake.
What do we want? When do we want it?
Vanessa Velasco, who's leading that chant, is a Salvadoran TPS holder. She helped organize this rally and became politically active in the past year.
We still have some time to see if something can be done. If we, you know, let them know that we are here.
Vanessa came to the U.S. around 2000. When she describes her homeland, El Salvador, it's like deja vu from my earlier conversations about Haiti. She talks about unstable government, violence, significant damage from earthquakes. Her husband, Enrique, also left to come meet her here and got a job in construction.
We married right here in the City Hall, San Francisco City Hall.
Now, they have three kids and a home in Brentwood in eastern Contra Costa County.
Hi, Nina.
How are you? Come in.
Thanks to see you.
Enrique says it took a lot of effort to make that happen.
I mean, for me, it has been like work. And I spent like, what was it, like 14 years without a vacation.
And he also works hard to make the place their own. Enrique tells me about his vision for an enclosed outdoor patio. He shows me their fireplace, which he built with bricks left over from a project at work. They've lived here now for over 15 years.
For us, this is the American dream. We have a lot of achievements. We're home, we have projects.
The achievements Vanessa and Enrique are most proud of are their three kids. You can hear the youngest, Andreas, playing in the background. And they've been saving up to help their eldest, Ariana, pay for her first year of college. But now, they're not sure whether they'll be here to support her at all. Here's Ariana.
When I start to think about it, I start to tear up. I really won't be able to see him unless I travel back. And with everything, I'm going to be tight economically.
As of right now, there's no clear sense of what will happen to the estimated 273,000 citizen children of TPS holders if their parents have to leave. Enrique says leaving Ariana could end up hurting the United States.
Who's going to provide for her? Is she going to have to apply for some help from the government? You know, they could become a burden for the country instead of what is going on right now, that in reality, we are not getting anything from the government.
In fact, TPS holders are contributing a lot. California stands to lose about $2.4 billion from Salvadoran TPS holders if they have to leave, according to the Center for American Progress. For parents like Armoniz with younger kids, it presents a really difficult decision.
What I'm going to do with him? Because take him back home, it's just like a miserable life. He don't speak my language. We try, but he don't speak my language. But, you know, I try to be strong for him. We just try to be strong.
In Washington, Democratic members of Congress have introduced the American Promise Act, which would let every current TPS holder apply for permanent residency. But still no decision on that.
I want to be where.
Back at Church in Novato, Pastor Fritz Toussaint and the children have now transitioned from Haitian class to Bible study. Sam is a quiet student in class. He's watchful and seems older than his 12 years. When he tells me how he's dealing with the thought of his mom leaving, he's self-possessed.
I'm not trying to be sad all the time or, you know, hard to deal with. I'm just trying to be easy, simple, and calm.
For right now, these people continue to live their lives, to work, to study, to protest, and to pray. Pray for a resolution that's easy, simple, and calm. In Novato, I'm Nina Gensler-Debs for Cross Currents.
Nina is KALW's immigration reporter. If you've got a story you'd like her to cover, email her at immigration@kalw.org. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. When the state released testing data for California's public school students earlier this fall, results for San Francisco Unified's African-American students were distressing. The president of the NAACP called the low achievement numbers, quote, criminal, and demanded a state of emergency that would rally citywide resources to help all students thrive. But test results don't come close to painting a full picture. Behind them is a long and complicated history for the city's Black students, and quite a few glimmers of hope. Last week, the district's new superintendent, Vincent Matthews, unveiled a detailed, expansive, and expensive plan to help Black students feel a sense of safety and belonging, and to compel teachers at the most challenging schools to stick around. It capitalizes on what's already working. Here to tell us more about all that is KALW's education reporter, Lee Romney. So a state of emergency sounds really serious. What is this stemming from? Has the achievement numbers for African-American students gotten a lot worse?
Well, actually, they haven't. But the results from the state standardized test, which is called the Smarter Balanced Test, are definitely low. Only 1/5 of African-American students met or exceeded standards on the English language arts portion, and only 1/8 met or exceeded them in math. Hmm. But the frustration is actually coming from how long that achievement gap between Black students and the group that tests highest, generally white or sometimes Asian students, has persisted. Mm-hmm. It's fluctuated over the years, but the superintendent showed the board some charts, and for the past quarter of a century, that big gap hasn't changed that much. Here's a clip of Brown of the NAACP at the board meeting.
It's not that the children are failing. I'm using pronoun we. We are failing.
Yes.
Now it's time for us to fess up and show some fruits of repentance. And at the top of the list, declare a state of emergency. If we don't do that, we're going to be back where we were 40 years ago.
So what is the history, Lee?
Well, he says 40 years. In 1978, the NAACP filed a lawsuit against the district for basically segregating African-American students. Mm-hmm. A consent decree was put in place, and it said that students from one racial or ethnic group couldn't make up more than 45% of the student body at any one school. And there was tons of busing of students out of Bayview Hunters Point. There was massive teacher overhaul. And then in 2001, after a group of Chinese-American parents who were opposed to the busing sued, the district started using socioeconomics instead of race and ethnicity, and the schools basically got resegregated. Mm. And through all that tremendous upheaval, the gap persisted. By 2005, that decree had been lifted, and then the district introduced something new called the Dream Schools, and those were these really rigorous kind of private school-styled approach with longer academic hours and uniforms and targeting mostly African-American students. But that got mired in political, just a big political mess. And so that fell apart. So there's this real feeling of deja vu for people who've been demanding change for such a long time.
Mm-hmm. And the city's African-American population really changed in that time.
Yeah, for sure. There's been this huge outmigration of middle-class African-American families from San Francisco. In early 2000, there were 10,000 Black students in the district schools, and by this past year, it was down to 3,900. Mm. So a lot of the African-American families that are left are living in poverty and often in neighborhoods with higher violence. And that means it takes a lot of effort and resources to create the best learning environment for those students.
Right. So the gap in test scores have stayed about the same for 25 years. But what has changed?
Well, there definitely have been bright spots that get kind of lost in the just, you know, talking about test scores alone. Psychiatrists and psychologists, this is just one example. Psychiatrists and psychologists from UCSF worked really extensively with students at one elementary school in Visitation Valley to address behavior problems that stemmed from trauma, and suspensions dropped to almost nothing. But then, you know, the grant for that very costly program ran out. Nearly 3 years ago, though, the district brought in somebody to lead a new initiative for African-American achievement and leadership, and there have been some real gains. Mm-hmm. Just last year, one elementary school saw a 30% increase in math scores for its African-American students. Hmm. So, you know, it's not all bad news. There's a focus on trying to make sure students and teachers in these historically underserved schools feel safe and heard.
Mm-hmm. So then how do we do that? What's the plan now?
Well, there's a new superintendent in town. He came along last spring, Vincent Matthews. Mm-hmm. And he's not only African-American. He grew up in the Bayview, and he started his teaching career in the Bayview. And his heart is really in this in a big way. Mm. And so he has a plan that focuses on part of it focuses on 10 schools that have high black student enrollment, low test scores, high poverty, and relatively inexperienced teachers. Teachers at those schools tend to have like half the teaching experience of the district average. So what the plan proposes is to bring in a lot of supports like social workers, reach out to families, and give teachers a lot of professional and personal support to help them stick around. And some of that has already started. But Matthews is also looking at schools elsewhere in the city where overall test scores look pretty good, mm-hmm. but there's still this enormous achievement gap between African-American students and the top-performing group of more than 50 percentage points. So there's 10 other schools in that category. Those are K-8 students. We're going to start with those 20 schools and just bring a whole bunch of resources to bear.
So lots of plans. They sound expensive.
Yep. And he said he actually used the term major resources. It's going to take major resources. But he also said he's committed to raising that money privately, you know, raising it so that it won't come out of the school budget. And so he's already kind of making the rounds and trying to talk up this plan. And the response from the board and even from the NAACP was pretty positive. And as for the state of emergency, the board members last week said, consider it declared.
Okay. Thank you, Lee.
Thank you.
Lee is KELW's education reporter. You can get in touch with her by emailing education@kelw.org. And a note to our listeners, KELW's license is held by San Francisco Unified School District. Today's Cross Currents team includes Raquel Maria Dillon, Angela Johnston, Christine Nguyen, Stephen Short, Lilia Vega, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are Jackie Sajiko and James Rollins. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our news director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by Lori Lewis and the Right Hands. They appear Saturday at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba. In daylight it dies, don't let the stars get in your eyes. So keep your heart for me, for someday I'll return. And you know you're the only one I'll ever love. Too many miles. Too many miles. Too many days. Too many nights to be alone.